Chuck and Julie, bringing you the truth, straight up.
I'm Julie Hayden. I'm working
an Emmy-winning former investigative reporter, a highly successful trial attorney, and publisher of a major Denver area newspaper. They've been partners as talk show hosts and in marriage as parents for over 10 years, providing thought-provoking information, opinion, and entertainment live, local, and interactive. Everyone's voice is always welcome on the Chuck and Julie Show.
Welcome, everybody. This is Kyle Rittenhouse, trial day number 10, and we'll be talking a lot about that. Chuck and Bonnie, well, Julie Hayden, True Straight Up, brought to you by
AmericaCitizenPress.com and Denver Center Gen X and Dr. Julie McCallan. Hey, let me, before we launch into this, remind you that you can always catch all of our shows at ChuckandJulie.com. We have links there to every place. And if you want to sign up for our newsletter, you can do it there too. We'd love to have people sponsor us, and you can get all of that information at bbsradio.com/Chuck and Julie Show. We're also on Substack now too. Just in case, you never know. YouTube today, it was kind of funny during the closing arguments, YouTube accidentally suspended all of the independent live streaming of the trial. You know, YouTube is saying they only want authorized sources authorized, you know, that they have authorized to. So what a joke that is. Yeah, we'll be talking about that. And I want to encourage folks to weigh in. 888-627-6008 is the number to call, 888-627-6008. We love to have people listening to us on Zoom. And if you're on Zoom, you can go ahead and either just type your comments in the chat section or go ahead and unmute yourself and you can comment there too. Bring your video up if you want to do that as well. And anyone, if you
just
want to
take over the show,
If you want to join us on Zoom, the way you do that is you just go to zoom.us and then the meeting number is 209-576-423. I think what's going on, obviously, if you're listening to this later, this will be over, but live right now, the defense is presenting its closing argument. The way it works is, first, they have incredibly boring, but really important jury select or jury instructions. And they went over those earlier. Then the prosecutors, theoretically, the judge said everybody had 2.5 hours, but
later said the prosecutors can spend the rest of the month.
Yeah. But you know what? I think that's good because every time the prosecutors open their mouth, it does not go well for them in this case so far. But so the prosecutors go first, then the defense attorney, and that's what's going on right now. The defense attorney is presenting his closing argument, and we'll talk about what a great job he's doing. Then the prosecution gets to go one more time, and they call that rebuttal. And usually it's not that much of a rebuttal. Usually, I mean, everybody knows what everybody's going to say. Usually that's when they just, in my experience covering it, they try to sort of emotionally appeal.
Well, it's, you know, you get your last, whoever gets last chance, they get first and last bite at the apple, which is
right.
Part of the reason why so much of the court system is so really crooked in favor of prosecutions.
But
if you've ever been to a federal trial, they do it somewhat differently. They have the two closing arguments, and then they give the jury instructions.
Well, and what they do here, and they'll do this again, too, is a lot of times then what they do is right at the end, then the judge...
They'll give some additional
They'll tell them how to fill out the jury forms,
yeah,
which is, in this case, it's interesting. They allow... Well, first, big... Well, they allowed the second-degree murder, what would be the equivalent in Colorado of second-degree murder or lesser, but included charge, but huge victory for the defense, and sort of showing the sliminess of the prosecution. Yes. This morning, the judge threw out the gun charge. So you know how Ben and Jerry's over the weekend was horrifyingly tweeted, Kyle Rittenhouse illegally carried the gun across state lines and shot and killed all these innocent people. Well, number one, the gun was never carried across any kind of state line.
Right.
Keeping in mind that, of course, no one cares that the protesters are coming from across straight line, but that was lie. Okay. And number two, even when Ben and Jerry's tweeted that, it was still a legal question. Was it legal or not? That was why it was a charge, and the jury would decide. But today the judge acknowledged that the Wisconsin gun law, that it's complicated, and I don't know.
But it's not that complicated. If you're 16, then you can't be carrying a rifle unless you got a hunting license. If you're 17, then you can't have one unless you have a hunting license. And it's not a short barreled shotgun or some other one. There's an AR-15 that has a 16-inch barrel. So it's pretty clear they never should have had the the claim. Yeah. And I think the defense brought that out. Here's basically the prosecution gave everything with Prosecutor Blinger.
Binger.
And Blinger. Binger? Oh, Blinger? Yeah.
Binger.
No, I think it's Blinger. I think it's a G there. But anyway.
Yeah, but there's no L. We digress.
Binger. Okay. Can you imagine?
Oh, well, no, why would facts?
Can you imagine what my life is like?
You can tell us a lawyer who's the reporter. If you're the lawyer, you just say whatever sounds good. Well, back in the old days when you were a reporter, you tried to actually get people's names right. But anyway, go ahead.
And he's a very bright guy. Went to University of Michigan Law School, which is the top 10 law school in the country, one of the top 10. And very capable, but a slime ball, a utter amoral slime ball. Throughout this case, with the bringing the charges within 48 hours, having some of the witnesses charged so they can't testify at the trial, constantly lying to the people. And, you know, lying is very effective if there's not a good rebuttal. And thank God everybody was terrified on this.
Some of the commentators. Kind of,
well, the commentators. And what is it called? Kita?
Yes.
Law, and they were saying, oh no, he's good, oh no.
They were worried the defense attorney
was going to be Binger, it's not going to be Jackus. But it turns out that Mark Richards,
the defense attorney.
The primary one, although Chiakas is from a different law firm, but has been doing a lot of the better job on the cross examinations, the direct and everything else, and Binger is not making the objections he should make and everything else. Which reminds me of another.
Wait, Chuck, make your point.
Well, that there are some lawyers that are only good at closing arguments. That's all they're good for. And Walter Grash was that. Walter Grash didn't know how to make.
He was a famous Denver trial attorney.
He did the United Bank murder case.
A bunch.
And he stunk on cross. He stunk on direct. He stunk on objections. That's why he had Scott Robinson. He always needed a good, bright, young attorney. He had Springer for a while there to make all the objections. Do all the other things, but he can make one hell of a closing statement. And I'll have to say, to the shock of everyone, including myself, Mark Richards is giving one hell of a closing statement.
Kyle Ricken. Yeah. And here, I mean, this was his opening. We'll talk about the prosecutions first, but the opening statement from the defense attorney was, Mr. Binger, to the jurors, Mr. Binger lied to your face. The truth matters. This is not a game. And now he's been going through showing the lies. So we'll go through what the prosecution said. And it is unusual. I've covered literally hundreds of cases. And usually the prosecutors are pretty dry in a lot of their, I mean, they make good comments. George Brockler is a particularly good prosecutor, but they're usually pretty dry and they don't go way out, you know, off the reservation, so to speak.
Because
they don't have to. And what they want to do is almost always kind of hammer home the law and explain why they proved what they did. But he just kept making outrageous statements that were clearly lies that he knew the defense was going to be able to argue as lie.
He didn't know. I mean, well, you know, you'd have to decide whether you're going to go after the prosecutor as your main line of defense.
And he is.
And Richard Stoss goes, could I finish?
I'm sorry.
He really just went right after him from the very beginning. And he did expose the lies. And I would think that the jury has no trust. I mean, normally the defense attorneys, because they're the ones who need the imaginations,
right,
off into flights of fancy. Prosecutors, just the law. Just give the law. That's nothing but the law. And here, having a terrible case and being dishonest people, crooked prosecutors, Binger represents everything we all hate about.
Well, and it's almost as if they spend too much of their time, the prosecution, reading MSNBC tweets or something like that and thinking they have a good case. I want to start and they're making assumptions. Now, again, we'll see. Obviously, this goes to the jury. They're making a lot of assumptions that people are going to buy their version of events, right? And their belief systems and things like that. We got some sound that I want to play. The first one was that, which to me is bizarre because it is so easily attacked, is they're attacking Kyle Rittenhouse knowing that they just had to drop the gun charge, knowing that Kyle Rittenhouse and the defense can now say Kyle Rittenhouse was perfectly legal in possessing the gun that night, they go ahead and start attacking him for having a gun in the first place, even though several of their witnesses, including one who tried to kill allegedly, well, not allegedly, but tried to kill Kyle Rittenhouse, had guns, right? Somehow it's okay when their people have guns.
But their gun,
they're heroes.
Yeah, but their gun, it was one of them had a gun that he killed or shot.
Well, the other guys, the brothers that they won't allow to testify, also had guns.
They also had guns, but he also, because he was a felon and other things, couldn't have a gun that night.
Didn't serial rapist felon, not just your pedophile serial rapist felon, by the way. So afraid, but one of the things that he tried to argue, the Binger, was that basically Kyle Rittenhouse is guilty by the very fact, forget this amendment, that the very fact that he legally possessed a gun there that night. So, Thomas, if we could play the gun soundbite, please.
That Joseph Rosenbaum was going to take that gun and use it on the defendant because they know you can't claim self-defense against an unarmed man like this. You lose the right to self-defense when you're the one who brought the gun.
What do you mean you lose the right to self-defense when you brought the gun? I mean,
so the guy who brings a knife is fine when you bring a gun. I mean, it's not a good idea to bring a knife to a gunfight, but if you do it and you try to kill somebody, someone can shoot you.
And what then the defense was making out, the witness that he was talking about, this is the first guy who was shot and killed by Kyle Rittenhouse. He's trying to say he was shot in the back. He's trying to say he was not a lie. Yeah, I mean, he wasn't. I mean, their own witness, and this is what the defense is doing a great job of bringing out, that Rosenbaum was lunging for the gun, had actually grabbed the gun, had gunshot residue on his hand, which could only have occurred. And then the defense did a really good thing. He kind of stood by the jury and he said, okay, the farthest he was away, he was running after him, chasing him after having threatened to kill him, cornered him, and then was 4 feet away when Rittenhouse first fired. And he stood 4 feet from the jury and he said, this is how far he was.
And then he lunged.
And then he lunged. So that argument went out. And then he was also able to very cleverly bring in that some of these people were in jail and things like that. The one guy, off their meds. The one guy was a serial rapist, like literally accused, I think, or convicted
pedophile
of raping five children. The other guy was a domestic violence strangulation problem. And the defense attorney has been doing a marvelous job of saying, well, when he was in jail, they didn't give him his meds. I mean, they can't bring up the criminal history, but they can point out the fact that he was in jail and not getting his meds. This is from Sandra. Hopefully, well, we'll get to this in a second. Hopefully, the jury is smart enough to see the difference. And this from Jacob. I heard on the radio that if Rittenhouse is innocent, several banks may be in legal trouble because these banks would not let Rittenhouse open up a defense account. I think they took his GoFundMe account away, too. They wouldn't let him do that.
Well, he eventually raised a lot of money.
They did raise a lot of money, but, you know, I don't know. Jacob,
I don't know. They probably have a right to refuse accounts, although maybe they shouldn't. I mean, it's just, it's tiresome how politically correct and against the average citizen so many.
But I mean, let's start with that. I mean, that's an assumption on the prosecutor's point that somehow, and that's why I think the left, like, they get themselves in trouble, fortunately, because they think, oh, everybody believes them, that somehow he's gonna say, well, you lose the right to defend yourself if you carry a gun. I mean, think about that. The whole point of carrying a gun is to defend yourself.
Right.
And the reason you carry it, most cops or people who carry it regularly, Rich Wyatt would tell you, is if everybody had a crystal ball and you knew when you were going to be walking into a dangerous situation or when you were going to be in a position where you needed your gun, well, then you would just carry your crystal ball around, right? But since we don't know that, the reason you carry your gun is in case. It's for self-defense. Arnie, I saw you turn on. If you want to go ahead and unmute yourself and comment. You there, Barney? Or if not, we're going. Okay. I thought he was just saying, okay, well, oh, go ahead. Okay. Now there you are. Go ahead.
There we go. All right. Okay. Hey, I got several things to cover here. So just give me a second. Let's start with the picture. If Tiger was in the back corner of your room there and I screenshotted you guys and Tiger's holding a bat. Okay.
There's Tiger.
And I screenshot that and I blow it up. We're not, like, right now back there, we're not sure if Tiger's gonna whack Julie in the head or Chuck or maybe the camera, or maybe Tiger doesn't like my voice and he's gonna whack the microphone, or maybe Tiger's gonna whack Chuck's kneecaps. But when you blow the picture up, Tiger looks a lot closer, and he doesn't look like he's in the same position
right.
as he did in the back of the room.
Right.
Another thing, 5.56 ammo, full metal jacket. 99.9% of 5.56 is full metal jacket. 55 grain, 65. In fact, I could almost say 100% of it is. It's irrelevant, but the prosecutor made it sound like.
Right.
Well, that it didn't use hollow point bullets. He didn't
use bullets. But exactly. The liberals don't want us to have hollow point bullets. It's stupid.
No, they kill people too much.
Yeah, but I got news for you. Any cop knows that his bulletproof vest is not going to stop a 5.56. Just not going to happen. It won't stop a 44 Magnum, more than likely. So when they talk about body armor, that's another joke. Another thing, the gun charge. It took this long for them to figure out. Okay, first off, the ATF throws a lot of crap out there. So it's very, some of these gun laws are very confusing. You can have an AR pistol, but it has to, the stock can only be so long. It could be a brace. The barrel can be 9 inches, but you can't take a 9-inch barrel and put a full-size stock behind it. There's all kinds of good, and you can't take a, supposedly when they come out, you can't take an AR pistol and hold it up to your shoulder. All kinds of stupid things. But you're telling me today, you guys figure out that this is actually a 16-inch barrel, regardless of whether it's a 14 with a 2-inch flash hider. Today,
they knew, and they were just going to wait and see what the judge did.
They didn't get away with it, which is all
another thing.
Let me just interrupt you 1 second. The reason that is, though, I think you can't underestimate how important that is. That the because they want to be able to say he illegally had the gun, right? So if you illegally have a gun, well, that might say something about your mindset. But when now the defense can argue, no, he legally had the gun, right? And plus, it undermines how hypocritical and sloppy and just downright dishonest the mainstream media is that keeps tweeting about him illegally having the gun. But anyway, so
crazy about that, though, hang on a minute. Today, I finally hear the term straw purchase. So they're going after the kid, Diamondback or whatever his name is, for the straw purchase, but not Kyle. That kind of surprises me. Yeah. I would think if there's a straw purchase, you know, that you're both responsible, but
Here's the thing. Here's the thing. That case has been, the prosecution is sleazier than you're realizing. That case has been adjourned, it said. Now, I'm not sure what that means. So he could testify, just like the other brothers are under that would be helpful to the defense, were the ones who fired the first shots, right? They can't testify. I bet you $1 billion.
Right.
I mean, it can't be a straw purchase if he possessed it legally, right? So
exactly. So you're right. But I just think that Kyle would be up for a straw purchase charge too, but forget that. By the way, the people that, and I'm not really big on Sharia law, and although I think that's what we got here, we got karma. Rosenbaum raped little boys between 9 and 11 years old. That's a fact.
Yeah.
Don't know how many. It was more than 5. I thought it was 9.
Well, but I think he was convicted of 5.
Okay. So we can figure that he's convicted of 5. He probably raped 30 or 50, whatever. Karma caught up to Rosenbaum, period. Whether it's the universe catching up to him or not, even though I still think Kyle was a jackass for taking the gun there. It doesn't matter. But hang on a minute. When you use your example, Chuck, you were there to defend your wife. You had to defend your wife. You were kind of, I'm sorry. I just think if I show up at a riot, if I show up with a concealed carry, as a concealed carry carrying a gun, and I'm going to run my mouth and antagonize Jeremy, that's who I was looking for, whatever his name was, then I'm asking for trouble. It's a different, I agree.
But now, Brian, I'm going to push back on that a little bit. If you listen to the testimony, the defense attorney is doing a good job, and we'll play another soundbite that shows how they're juxtaposing this. And it'll depend. I mean, once again, you've hit kind of the key issue on the head as in terms of how the jurors are going to look at it. But the defense attorney is going through an opening arguments and getting all the people who say the Carsoars people wanted help. Kyle went down there to give help. Keep in mind, the shooting thing only took 2 minutes and 55 seconds. All the rest of the evening, he is basically going around helping people. He only leaves, right. I think, the parking lot when they start sending it on fire, right? And then he loses his friend. He had given his friend his bulletproof vest, which arguably, why is he doing that if he's looking for trouble?
Exactly. As an active shooter. You're right.
Right. And I think he's wandering around. So, and I think, but like the prosecution is trying to call him an active shooter. Can you believe this? They called the mob heroes. They said these were heroes risking their lives.
First Amendment protesters.
This defense attorney is awesome. He is ripping them up. He hasn't skipped a beat. He hasn't missed a beat. And clearly, when you listen to the open arguments of the prosecution, it's a constant, nonstop lying weasel. It's funny how he's basically saying the kid that pulled the Glock on Rittenhouse, oh, no, that was an involuntary after his arm blew off.
He testified
that he put the gun in the kid's face. You have testimony, you dumbass. Right. I don't know. It's and one other thing. One minute somewhere in there, the prosecutor said, you're responsible for every bullet that comes out of that gun. But then it was okay for the kid to shoot the warning shot. Warning shots are not allowed. They made asses out of themselves. I don't know. I'm not a lawyer, but I don't know how you can convict him on any of this now. And it's funny listening to that when the judge was arguing with them about the lesser charge crap. That's what I was trying to ask you earlier.
Right.
Why can't I throw that in there and say, hey, you got, and he did. Basically, this lawyer, man, he called the prosecutor a liar. Yeah. He said, you guys are
lying to your faces. Yeah. And he's Junior,
this is unreal. I have never seen anything like it.
It is good. I mean, you can hear the righteous indignation in his voice. Bonnie, I have to tell you, this is from Jacob, though. MSNBC's Joy Reid called truck drivers old white troublemakers and Trump supporters.
Yeah.
So
we are. Joy, we are, Jacob. We're white trash, man. But I'll tell you what. I'm not going to bring a gun. I got pepper spray. And let me tell you what, a little pepper spray. See, I got my ass kicked when I was 50 years old. I realized I'm not a tough guy anymore. Pepper spray and a stick. I'm telling you, it's great. It's and actually a fire extinguisher works. I was surprised when they talked about the fire extinguisher. You blast a 6'6" guy in the face with the fire extinguisher, and then you heart punch him. I guarantee you, from my past experience, they are on the ground. I will guarantee it. You don't need a gun all week. And one other thing, Chuck, I walk into my gun store to replenish my pepper spray, and the guy says, I don't need that. I got a Glock. I am not lying to you, delivering fuel for 35 years. If I would have used a gun every time, I could have, dealing with street people, drunks, drug addicts, whatever, there'd be 10 people dead. That's all I'm saying. I like the pepper spray. I really don't want to be in the universe.
Nothing wrong.
Nothing wrong there.
Pepper spray is awesome. If you get them in the ice. Hey, I love you guys. Thanks for listening.
Chuck, thank you for the
love
call.
Your opinion. See you guys. Bye.
All right.
Unmute me. Get me out of here.
All right. 888-627-6008. If you want to call in, if you're on Zoom and you want to unmute yourself and comment like Barney did, you can absolutely do that too. Well, one of the things that the prosecution, in my opinion, is doing majorly wrong, and tell them that you're, when you're putting together the narrative, tell them your theory is
The theory is the best defense is one closest to the truth. And really, it's any story you tell in court, this one's best. It's closest to the truth. You don't want to be too literal. You can't tell a good story, but you start varying too much from the truth and you can get really zapped. And I think that's what happened to this prosecutor. He decided to tell stories that weren't very close to the truth, not even arguably. And I think they're going to punish him. I was not sanguine about a not guilty verdict and all the charges. I don't know, the prosecutor will get to come back, although his credibility has been so tarnished by the defense. Maybe he can make a great argument finishing up. I thought it was just a brilliant idea. Go after this prosecutor because he's not likable. There's something sleazy about him.
Here's the
highly
thing.
Intelligent, but sleazy. And corrupt, and people don't like prosecutors who are corrupt, although so many of them are.
Well, I think part of the problem is, again, going back to the gun soundbite we played you, he has fallen into the trap of thinking that everybody thinks like he does. He's viewed this case clearly not from a legal or prosecutorial point of view. He's viewed it through this liberal garbage lens. And so what happened to them, and we'll get to some great quotes that the defense attorney had, is they're just thinking, well, everybody's going to blame Kyle for even showing up in the first place. And what the witnesses say doesn't matter. But instead, all of his witnesses keep blowing up on him. And his witnesses under cross-examination have to keep acknowledging, well, yeah, Kyle was being attacked. Well, yeah, I did have the gun pointed at Kyle's head. And yes, I was lying when I said I dropped the gun. I mean, so now all of a sudden, in the last minute, he's got to come up with this provocation defense. And so
the judge shouldn't allow it.
No. And so what they did is they had this, some expert came up with it. Was this one grainy piece of video that they like manipulated. And you're like, what? Is that two women with a vase there? I mean, and they're claiming that it shows Kyle Rittenhouse pointing the gun at somebody. Well, the defense attorney was great today. He said it's hocus pocus and out of focus.
Yeah.
And somebody else was tweeting, if the pixels don't fit, you must acquit. And he pointed that out. He said that, you know, this didn't come up. He was saying you didn't hear anywhere in the case anything about provocation. Because it wasn't their theory until their case blew apart.
Yes.
And then he's saying it clearly, you can't see. But let me, the other thing, everybody's saying, let's go, Barney. That's right. Jacob says, if you use a fire extinguisher, you'd hit the guy over the head, that's attempted murder. Particularly if it's a Capitol Hill police officer where you don't even hit him. And who doesn't want to just cut the prosecutors here? He's all show, no go. Here's another thing too, where he just buys into the lie. So he's trying to tell the jurors that these were mostly peaceful protests.
Just good old American.
Yeah, that these were, and he's saying that Kyle Rittenhouse is an active shooter and the guys that were attacking him, that he actually, what did he say about Huber, who was the guy that got shot after he hit Kyle twice in the head with a skateboard and was trying to grab his gun, right? He said he saved lives.
He was his lifesaver, all right. Well, we know something about Antifa and other ones, Black Lives Matter, skateboard, because when we were down at the Capitol for the pro-police one, the head of the guy who sponsored the thing, they took the skateboard to his head and cut it all apart. So that's one of their tactics. It kind of sounds so innocent. Well, it's a skateboard. You don't think, well, it's no different than a bat.
No.
You put it in your hands and swing it, you can kill somebody. No problem about it. And that's exactly what they do.
Exactly. And he's trying to say, well, he carries a skateboard with him everywhere.
Oh, yeah. That's why,
yes, he does. So he can attack people. I mean, they leave out the fact, but they can't talk about this.
I'm not sure if I was Binger that I'd want to run. He ran before
depends on how this comes out, lead
prosecutor, and he lost. Well, I don't
but
care
he literally
how it comes out.
Called the mob. And including Huber, including the people who were shot, heroes, and tried to portray them as, and we'll get to what the defense attorneys had to say about this, tried to portray them as heroes chasing down an active shooter, compare them to cops chasing down an active shooter situation.
As opposed to Rittenhouse, who is accused of being a wannabe cop.
These were
real cops.
These are real. So if we could play the mob hero soundbite, please, Thomas.
When they're told that person running up the street just shot someone, we don't have time in the moment to go back and take a look at the body and replay the video and make a decision before going after the person with the gun. You know, we've had several police officers testify that in an active shooter situation, their first instinct, their first training is to go in and stop the threat. They don't sit there and wonder, well, maybe it was self-defense. I don't know. I'm going to, you know, wait and see. And every day we read about heroes that stop active shooters. That's what was going on here. And that crowd was right. And that crowd was full of heroes. And that crowd did something that, honestly, I'm not sure I would have had the courage to do. If I see a guy running up the street with an AR-15 and I hear he just shot somebody,
Did you hear that? That crowd was full of heroes. Let me tell you what the defense attorney had to say about that. He said that crowd, and he was a rioter. He was burning a dumpster. He was chasing down Rittenhouse, hitting him on the head. He was no hero. The other guy was lunging for his gun after threatening to kill him. He was no hero. And then the other guy who got shot and wounded, he was pointing a Glock at his head when everyone else was backing up. He points out, and I think he's doing a great job of this, that this whole thing, because the left, see, they aren't telling you the truth about this. This whole incident here took 2 minutes and 55 seconds. Before then, Kyle Rittenhouse is wandering around the scene. He's at that car place. He's helping people. He's giving them bandages. He's saying, medic, medic. He's not doing anything, right? And it's only after Rosenbaum, then this is the 2 minute, 55 second, the one guy who had previously said, I'm going to kill you, starts chasing him, that all of this other stuff happens. And he points out, Kyle Rittenhouse is not running around shooting wildly. There are all kinds of other people who are there who are clearly threatening, who are shouting, kill him, but are not actually doing something to further an effort to kill him. He doesn't shoot them at all. He doesn't do anything. I mean, that's not an active shooter situation, right? This is someone who's shooting only people who are trying to hurt and kill him. And as Kyle Rittenhouse said, when Huber, yeah, he had a skateboard, but I knew if he knocked me out, he was going to grab my gun, shoot me, and shoot other people. And yet the prosecutor has the nerve to say that that person was a hero. I mean, it's, and I don't think the jury's going to buy that.
I said the saying is the best defense that closest to the truth. It's never really said about prosecutions because they usually can just, you know, a guy shot him, you know, pretty close. Right. Here, it's just I would think the jury, depending upon what their attitudes are coming into the trial, and they'll just be outraged at this lying scum of a prosecutor. Maybe that's redundant, but
well, then with the other thing, what the defense is doing a very good job of showing is what a rush to judgment there was. I mean, keep in mind, Kyle Rittenhouse tried to turn himself in there, couldn't, because the cops clearly were idiots. But at any rate, so he goes back home to Antioch, Illinois, turns himself into police there, and they call Kenosha and the Kenosha police. And within, 48 hours, he's charged. Okay, now keep in mind, this is a complete riot scene. I mean, there's tons of witnesses. There is no way. They decided then and there what to do. The defense attorney points out, and we'll get to another soundbite here, that they had a search warrant for Kyle Rittenhouse's cell phone. So they gave it to him, right? And they sent it off to the FBI. The FBI couldn't open it. They didn't have the software. So they said, well, here's the passcode. We'll give it to you. We don't have anything to hide. They found nothing on the phone about militia, nothing on the phone about white supremacy, nothing on the phone that incriminates him at all in any way, shape, or form. Keep in mind, they also had a search warrant for the Grosskreutz guy. He's the guy that was pointing the Glock at his head. They had a search warrant for his phone. But guess what they did with that search warrant? Nothing. Didn't execute it. Didn't search his phone at all. Now, you got to ask, like he said, why would they not do that, right? I mean, they had it.
Scummy, dishonest prosecutors.
Didn't even try. Didn't even try to do that. So the defense is going on. He's saying he's lying to you about what the evidence shows. They're manufacturing this picture. So don't be fooled by that. And instead, the defense is going through all of the witnesses saying, here's what the witness told you. Right. And he said, you know, they're making up that you can't have a gun, that the mere fact of possessing a gun all of a sudden eliminates the self-defense thing. This was not a bunch of heroes. This was a mob that was rioting and destroying Kenosha, Wisconsin. And the prosecution decided for political reasons they were going to go after Rittenhouse from the very beginning and didn't even consider anything else. And then, as we all know, then continue to, I mean, I would think there's some sort of obligation if you're in a prosecutor and you realize that the evidence does not fit the charge. I would think that there'd be some, you'd have to drop the charge, right? But instead they don't.
Why do you think that would be the case?
Yeah.
I mean, I suppose you have to have probable cause to bring the charge. You don't have to believe it beyond the reasonable doubt. And of course, they have immunity and they're never going to be charged with anything.
Right.
So this is
from Sandra. What a jackass. The left never tells the truth. But now let's get into the tricky part, though. And here's kind of when I want to go to Barney's part. And if you guys want to chime in again, 888-627-6008, 888-627-6008. So what do we think is going to happen? I think that what's going to happen is directly, and this will, if you're listening to this in the podcast, it's already probably happened, they'll wrap up the closing arguments, the case will go to the jury. Probably given the time in Wisconsin, the jurors probably won't really start deliberating until tomorrow.
They gave them the choice.
Okay. Yeah. And maybe they might want to start. They might not. I'm going to make a prediction here. I don't know that you get an outright acquittal on this. I think that you've got 12 people. Look at the different ways that the world is viewing this case as it is, right? I think it's going to be very hard to convince 12 people that everything was self-defense and that Kyle Rittenhouse bears no amount of responsibility. I don't personally think he does, but to convince 12. On the flip side of that, though, I think it's going to be very hard to convince 12 people that there was absolutely no self-defense involved in this. So I'm thinking there might be a good chance for a hung jury in this case. What do you think?
I certainly believe, before I heard the arguments this afternoon, that it would be a hung jury, a lot along the lines that you talked about, because the jury pool has got, you know, probably equal amount of lefties and righties and whatever else. I do say, after listening to that, in the outrageous conduct of the prosecutor and the defense attorneys bringing up how outrageous the prosecutor is, and how he's lying to him and everything else, I think that he'll be found not guilty on most of the charges. There may be one that they're hung on, or two, but my view of what was going to happen, they really changed based on how far out Binger went, and how good, and everybody's afraid that Mark Richards would suck because he sucked for the whole trial. But boy, he gave a Walter Garash summation.
I think you have a point there in that. I think if Binger had stayed closer to the actual truth, then he might have had a better chance. I think you're right. His horrific opening argument and the fact, I think if you're a juror, I mean, remember, these are jurors who live in Kenosha, Wisconsin, right? Or nearby. And they're like, no, these aren't heroes, right? This is a bad time in our country. The people who are burning down dumpsters and things like that, you may agree with their right to do it, but I imagine most of the jurors would not consider them heroes. And I don't think that most of the jurors are going to be like, oh yeah, they were chasing him to stop an active shooter. No, they weren't.
No, they weren't.
No,
they're just killing somebody they thought was on the other team. That's what they were going to do.
But here's the thing though. It is, I think the tricky case is going to be the first guy that he shot, because that guy was not armed, so to speak. He was reaching for the gun. I think the pathologist's testimony was really helpful there, showing how he was shot. The prosecutor kept saying he was shot in the back, and the defense attorney said that's a flat out lie. He wasn't shot in the back. Shooting in the back is if you're standing over somebody, you shoot down right with them like that. He was shot. It kind of grazed his back because he was lunging at him. Right. So that's a whole different thing. But that's, again, that was stupid of the prosecutor to do that. That's a flat out lie.
And
I mean, and to try to mischaracterize the evidence, I still think but I could see a juror. I mean, I could see a juror saying, you know, I don't know about that guy. The other two, clearly he was they didn't have a gun pointed at him. The guy was hitting him on the head. I could see those faces.
I just think the misactions of the prosecution could, you know, now, can you get a hung jury? The one person, you can get one person saying, I'm not going to convict, and that's what it is. But I think they really killed their case, even though I think all the people commenting was how Binger was doing a good job and arguing for it. But the farther he got into it and the farther off he went, the farther outside of the realm of possibility, I'm not closest to the truth, but even just lying. I'm just grotesque lying. I mean, it's kind of like, okay, what could we call the rioters and looters? We can call them citizens protesting First Amendment rights, and then they try to stop an active shooter. Well, yes, I mean that.
But then to even make the bigger jump from that to heroes, I mean that's ridiculous. This is from Jacob. Where's Marsha Clark when you need her?
That's true.
And Leo,
she's a prosecutor,
I can't wait to see the mostly peaceful protests that occur once he's acquitted. Yeah, you know, it's going to be tricky. This would be my guess, because there's also a ton of video evidence in this. I think this could be a lengthy jury deliberation. And I have a feeling that you're going to get, in cases like this, and this always happens, so be prepared for this, the jurors start asking questions, because the jury instructions in terms of guilt and when can you consider the lesser but included charges, which I think are the equivalent of second degree murder, that's confusing to any jury. And they start sending out notes saying, can you explain this again? And they can't go back and explain. They always send a note back in, which I'm sure the jurors hate, saying, you just have to use your best recollection. Yeah. Then they send something out and they say, well, we can't come to an agreement. And then they send something back and say, without whatever, you know, stick to your principles and stick to your beliefs, but listen to the other people and see if you can try to reach a verdict. So it's not going to be that easy. There's a ton of videotape to look at, which in many cases is not entirely clear. Number one, well, easy to see.
Except they've watched it 10,000 times.
Right. Oh, Jacob, this guy makes Marsha Clark look like Perry Mason. Well, and here's another.
Who is a prosecutor in Perry Mason? Oh, he's lost all the cases.
No.
That's who Blinger reminds me of.
Here's another thing, too, though, that you got to be careful of. You know, the left knows that they're losing the case. I mean, even they've looked at it and they're like, well, and again, you talk to people and you've talked about this before. Most people think that Kyle Rittenhouse shot three unarmed black people who were going like this, right?
And he gunned them down.
And he just gunned them down. And as the facts come out, it's like, oh, wait, number one, they were all white. And number two, you know, they were threatening him. And in two cases, at least, they were armed and actually attacking him. That's a little bit of a switcheroo that they didn't talk about before. The white supremacist militia stuff, absolutely zero evidence of
well,
that.
Well, the Fox reporter asked John Psaki, why did the president call him a white supremacist? We're not going to comment.
Well, we have that soundbite. Oh, good. Remember, way back when, before the election, Joe Biden was happy to call Kyle Rittenhouse a white supremacist. And Peter Doocy, now that we know, I mean, you've got to believe if there was any evidence that Kyle Rittenhouse had ever even like briefly thought of looking for some information about white supremacists, we would have heard about it. But that's if we could play the Rittenhouse number three soundbite, please.
Case. Why did President Biden suggest that Kyle Rittenhouse on trial in Kenosha is a white supremacist?
So, Peter, what I'm not going to speak to right now is anything about an ongoing trial, nor the president's past comments. What I can reiterate for you is the president's view that we shouldn't have, broadly speaking, vigilantes patrolling our communities with assault weapons. We shouldn't have opportunists corrupting peaceful protests by rioting and burning down the communities they claim to represent anywhere in the country. As you know, closing arguments in this particular case, which I'm not speaking to, I'm just making broad comments about his own view. There's an ongoing trial. We're awaiting a verdict. Beyond that, I'm not going to speak to any individuals or this case.
But the president has spoken to it already. And his mom now, Kyle Rittenhouse's mom, came out saying that the president defamed her son. And that claims, she claims that when the president suggested her son's white supremacist, he was doing that to win votes. Is that what happened?
I just have nothing more to speak to an ongoing case where the.
You know, and I guess, can you sue the president of the United States for defamation?
Sure.
You know, that would be kind of good to see, because it's like, you know, again, it was like when Barack Obama was talking about that, you know, he could be my son kind of thing. One thing politicians should not do ever is, and nor really should celebrities, and nor should LeBron James and all of these idiots, right? Or Ben and Jerry's who just keep tweeting stuff that's not true. I mean, we've learned in the past few years, right, that the left-wing controlled media, or the left-wing co-conspirators could care less about whether it's true or not. They're going to continue saying that he illegally had the gun. They're going to continue to wrongly say that he carried it across state lines. They're going to continue to frame this in right. They're going to continue to frame it in racist tweets.
Well, the director of Gasland, and I forget his name, but he's a big lefty, he says, you know, I want to support, I don't want to offer any support for a murderer of my brothers. And you kind of, yeah, I bet you don't. And it's just the left is so despicable these days. This is from Sandra. This is great. Peppermint Patty doing her thing.
Yeah, that's on exactly Jen Psaki. Right.
I knew Jen Psaki reminded me of somebody.
Well, you know, again, it's appalling that he was even commenting that anybody, any politician would immediately link him to white supremacy. But keep in mind, they don't care, right? We're white supremacists. Parents are white supremacists. Black people, Candace Owens, Casper Stockham, they're white supremacists, even though they're black. Babies are born white supremacists. This is their thing that they want to just keep going after. And so they're going to continue to do that. The judge is a white supremacist. The judge made a joke about Asian food. So he's racist. I mean, it was like ridiculous, right?
But, so, this is from Jacob Saka. It's much to worry about after the Kamala Harris debacle.
Oh, okay. Briefly, we can talk about that. If you don't know what Jacob is talking about. And I don't wonder who's leaking here. CNN did a story about the fact that Kamala Harris is all whiny because everybody at the west of the Biden side of the White House hates her. And so they, Jen Psaki, and they had to know this. They had to do it on purpose to add fuel to the rumor, said, just in case anyone's wondering, we love Kamala. It's like, oh, right. Yeah, you're just going to really tweet that. But that's just the way they operate, right? They're just going to lie to you. And
farthest from the truth. Make the statement farthest from the truth possible.
And they want to frame it because I think they want riots, right? One way or the other. Oh, wow. They want riots. Sure, they want riots one way or the other because it continues to fuel the chaos that they want the country to be descended into. They want to destroy the country. They want to divide us on race. So it doesn't even matter if race, as in this case. I mean, the tweets that you read, it's like, if a black kid, you know, had been in the streets that night, he would have been shot and killed by the police. It's like, what?
What?
You know, what? And then you want to say, you know what? If a black kid had been there and three white guys had chased him down and tried to clear him, he wouldn't be facing, I would bet, first degree murder charges in the case, right? He'd be probably, you know, have some fund named after him now and would be making millions of dollars on TikTok and YouTube. Oh, yes, Sandra is, and the judge has God Bless the USA as a ringtone on his phone. Oh, no.
How dare he do that?
How dare he? Because if you're a patriot in this country, that means you're a racist, right? Can't be the just. I mean, what if he has a Christmas song on it? Oh, that's racist, too.
White Christmas? What do you mean? That's clearly racist.
So anyway, we'll see. I have a feeling that the case went way better. And the defense is doing a good closing argument.
They keep on arguing that he shouldn't have taken the stand, and there's a lot of truth to that. But when the prosecutors go way overboard and describe him as a vigilante and a vicious, and he came across absolutely the opposite of that. And I think it serves him well for whatever the PR is afterward. People got to know him a little bit and got to see who he was, and not just a blank face. So in a self-defense case, you often need to put them on. I think he could argue that they shouldn't have, but I think it really helped humanize them.
This, and I'll say this, because again, I've covered bazillions of trials, and I think there are different kinds of trials, right? Different kind of cases. I've covered some where the facts just, you know, indisputably speak for themselves. I was covered one time, it was a horrific child abuse case where they killed a little boy by locking him in the closet for weeks and starving him. And the defense attorney tried to argue that he may have died of diabetes. And of course, they were convicted. They did not take the stand. And I think that's, you know, I mean, they locked him in the closet. And I mean, there was tons of evidence that there was no point in them taking the stand. There's no way that you can explain that kind of thing. I've covered other cases where I think the person taking the stand completely hurt themselves when they didn't have a good, there was another case where I won't go into it. It was like this weird psychological rebirthing thing where this little girl was supposed to be reliving her trauma by coming out of the birth canal. They wrapped her up in blankets and suffocated her. Yeah, that went badly. That one, yeah. And the woman who did this, rather than getting on the stand and saying, oh my God, this went terribly wrong, we're so sorry. I mean, basically said, so a little girl shouldn't have died. She should have told Alyssa. I mean, she basically refused to take any kind of credit or show remorse. So she got convicted. I think in a case like this, it's going to come down to not really what the facts are so much as how the jurors view the facts that have been presented. I mean, if you're a juror, kind of like, and you're looking at even close, no offense, Barney, the way Barney does, I think you want to hear from Kyle Rittenhouse to say, what were you thinking? What were you trying to do? What was going through your head? And so I think in this case, you know, I think it was probably the best decision the defense attorney, given particularly how good he's been. You know, they practice.
We should have brought the soundbite where a former prosecutor, Matthew Morrison from Georgia, was on with Sean Henry, who's a left-wing Fox commentator. And he's just saying, how dare that kid sound rehearsed. It sounded like he went over his testimony with his lawyer. Oh, yeah,
sorry. That would never happen, yeah.
Oh, no, you'd never go over with yours. I mean, it's just so pathetic.
That they're doing that.
Sandra asked, does the prosecution get a rebuttal closing? It does.
Yes.
And the judge basically said they can go long as they want. Hopefully they'd be digging themselves a bigger pit.
Yeah, you know, normally the judges always tell, this is, again, my experience, the judges always say that you only have, I was trying to see if it's on my Twitter feed, but it's not yet. You only have a certain amount of time and the lawyers agree. And for the most part, it's a pretty long time. And so the lawyers don't like to go over it anyway, right? And then if somebody wants to go longer, the judge lets them, because I have a feeling you'd hate to be a judge and say, you know, get overturned on appeal because you were in a hurry to get home for lunch or something like that.
No, but I don't think the prosecutor gets to argue both sides of his case forever. I mean, it's ridiculous.
I imagine they're setting some sort of parameters.
No, they're not setting any parameters. Well, he clearly said he was not setting any parameters.
I mean, if he's still doing it Thursday, I think he might say, okay, we need to wrap it up.
They're going to finish.
But I would say in this case, go for it. If you're the prosecutor, because I don't
lost
know.
It so far.
I don't know how he goes back and tries to argue. No. These people were heroes. The mob was a hero. Huber, you know, even though he was setting dumpsters on fire and he was chasing him and trying to kill him, he was a hero who saved lives by trying to take out Kyle Rittenhouse. How on earth did he save lives? I mean, it's ridiculous. So we'll see on that. But I think back to the issue of him taking the stand, I think that was the best decision. I don't think the only decision, but the best decision that they could make.
I don't know. It's helped in some ways and it always hurts in some ways.
Well, it gives them stuff to attack you on. This from Charlene, prosecution has nothing but a con intimidating game. Yes. And Charlene, that raises another point that sort of throws a whole other aspect into the jury deliberations. You've heard the Chicago police have had, you know, their vacation canceled. All the stores are boarded up again in Kenosha. You got to wonder how much that impacts you as a juror as well. We know that there've been but the George Floyd friend saying they're taking pictures and, you know, the jurors will be doxxed.
Luckily, the FBI is too busy to be
arresting
involved
Steve Bannon.
They're
busy arresting Steve Bannon and keeping an eye on parents and school board meetings,
right,
so they won't be able to go after it.
Our own KGB, we get to suffer through.
That's right. So anyway, so that is it. For today, we'll see. I mean, you know, I don't know. Wednesday, we'll see. My prediction is we will not have a verdict by Wednesday. I think it's just a complicated case with a lot of different things for a juror to talk about. I'm always wrong.
You have no idea. And that judges will tell you they're always wrong when they try to outguess a jury. But I have no idea. I think it's possible that the prosecutors annoyed enough people, but maybe not. Maybe some people like him. So who knows?
Who knows? If you're a lefty, you might. And then also on Wednesday, though, this we do know for sure, we're going to have Ben Murray from the Independence Institute had a really interesting article about Jared Polis saying, oh, I care so much about small businesses.
He destroyed them all.
Well, he destroyed them all during the lockdown. He's got some really startling statistics on just how devastating it was. So we'll be talking to him about that. So meantime, thank you to everybody on Zoom. Thank you to the guys at BBS.
And we'll see you on Wednesday.
See you Wednesday.